Hello there, Dave here, and before we get to today's episode about Transistor, I want to tell you about stuff going on in Backlog Land through the customary thank yous and all that. The winner of May's Patreon poll was Dave the Diver, so thank you to all who voted in that poll. I hope everyone's looking forward to an episode about Dave the Diver coming straight from a fellow Dave. You know you can trust me on that episode. So, looking forward to that. Thanks to all who voted. And thank you to the patrons who support the show every month. I appreciate you all very much. These wonderful heroes of mine are Chris Nelson, the Top 3 Podcast crew, Chris Copleen, Eric Guess, Rick Firestone, Nick Ficori, Jill, Jeff, formerly Jerf, Kieran, Soccer, ZNA, Cupcake, Kyle, Christian S., Matt, aka Stormageddon, JD, Doug Leaf, Jason Emery, Brian Skirsha, Randall, Jake Martin, Jenny E., a new patron, Kurt Mattis. Welcome, Kurt. And many more have all chosen to support the show over at patreon.com/realDaveJackson. Your support is much appreciated. And with all that being said, let's get on to Transistor. Hello, everybody. My name is Dave Jackson, and you're listening to Tales from the Backlog. This is a video games review podcast where each week I'm joined by a guest to bring a game out of the backlog, play it, and discuss. My guest today is a friend of the show, co-host of Low Five Gaming, and he's the voice inside all the swords at your local flea market, Alex. Welcome back on the show, Alex.
Hey, Dave. Good to be back. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, of course. Real excited to talk with you again. Longtime listeners will recognize Alex from the Red Dead Redemption 2 episode, along with his brother Luke, other host of Low Five Gaming. And that was a really fun episode, so I'm excited about our game today, which is Transistor. Transistor is an action/strategy RPG developed and published by Supergiant Games for PlayStation 4 and PC in 2014. With future releases on other platforms, it's on basically everything now. And if you haven't played Transistor, here is the spoiler policy. It's the same as every episode of the show. We're not going to spoil the story for you. We're going to not really like talk shop too much in the first portion of the episode. And then down in the show notes, you'll find a timestamp for when spoiler time begins. So if you want to jump out, you can jump out at that point. So, fairly standard spoiler policy, just like most episodes. We've got some elevator pitches for you in case you don't know what Transistor is. I say Transistor is one of Supergiant's most creative works and one that goes on to inform their later, more financially successful and popular games. Alex, what's the pitch for Transistor?
Yeah, man, that one checks out. But what I have here is Transistor, where turn-based strategy meets action RPG in an unexpected marriage that's like peanut butter meeting jelly in a noir punk dystopia. The genre mashup you didn't know you were craving.
Yeah, absolutely, man. There's a lot going on, especially with the gameplay in Transistor. And I'm really excited to talk about it again. I played this on Switch. This game looks fantastic on the Switch OLED screen. That's where I played it this time. This is my second time playing it. My first time was also on Switch. And a playthrough took me about 8 hours. The Switch is a real pain in the ass if you want to track how long games take. But yeah, how long did your playthrough take you?
Yeah, so I also played on the Switch. I have the OLED as well, and I played 100% handheld. So I was really taking advantage of that beautiful mm-hmm. screen that the OLED gives us. But I would say it was about seven or eight hours for myself as well.
Gotcha. So we'll jump into our personal histories with Transistor here, and with Supergiant Games, of course, because they're one of, I feel like they're one of the darlings in the gaming industry, from really humble indie beginnings all the way up to they're kind of a powerhouse now. So tell me about your history with Supergiant and Transistor in particular.
Yeah, so I didn't know anything about Supergiant until Hades. Hades was that, you know, indie darling that kind of took over the world. I think it was Game of the Year a few years mm-hmm. back.
Yeah.
And everybody played it, including me. If you haven't played it, it's worth picking up and playing.
Yeah.
There's a second one on the way, so that will intrigue some folks, get some folks playing the first one first. But it was great. I fell in love with Hades, and by proxy, I fell in love with Supergiant. I needed to know. I was like, damn, where'd these guys come from? So I started digging into them, learning more about their studio, looking into their other games. And I made a short list of the, you know, of their games, because it is kind of a short list.
Yeah.
But a lot of cool ones, man. And I threw them on the eShop wish list, and then I got hit with a little notification saying that they were all on sale. So I swooped them around the same time that I beat Hades. And shamefully, I don't know if it's shame, it's just the way it is, man. But they've been sitting yeah. in my collection. They've been sitting in my backlog. Yeah. So needless to say, I have not played. This is my first playthrough. And we'll talk a little bit more about the implications of that later, I assume, the multiple playthroughs on this game. But it was a real treat, dude. And I'm glad, because it's always been one that I wanted to pull up out of the backlog. So I was super glad when you hit me up and we were like, hey, man, you interested in checking out Transistor? I was like, yes, 100% full send. And I'm so glad we did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, you guys did a Hades episode on Low 5, right?
We did. Yep.
Yeah. So I think I remember that. And I was like, yeah, I wonder if Alex is interested in looking back at Transistor.
Right. And I think you hit me up, I think, right after we finished Grease as well, which is a very different game. But yeah. there's some cool art themes that happen in both. So I think a lot of folks, when they speak about Transistor, they do talk to the music impact that Transistor mm-hmm. has. So I think there might have been some themes playing that maybe got you thinking, maybe we'll get the Lo-Fi boys on here.
Yeah, for sure. I also did an episode about Hades. It was episode 4 of Tales from the Backlog. So back in the day. So I really love that game, but I got in on Supergiant back when, not right when Bastion came out, but pretty soon after. I played it like on the Xbox 360. It was one of the first like digital games that I ever bought, because they had like the Xbox 360 arcade or whatever they called it. One of the first indie games I ever played was Bastion, and I loved it when I first played it. I haven't replayed it since. I'm a little nervous about going back to it, thinking about like how things have evolved since then, especially with Supergiant, but I'm sure that there's something to like still there. I'll get back to it sometime. But I did play Bastion, and then when Transistor came out, I wasn't really like paying that much attention to what was going on. I think 2014, I would have been I would have just been playing stuff on the Wii U. I didn't have a PS4 and I didn't have a PC. So I would never, this was just not on my radar. And then kind of like you, like I started, you know, I got a Switch and I started looking back at, you know, stuff to buy and looking at lists of like best Switch games and stuff. And I was like, oh shit, the people who made Bastion, they made other games. And so I picked this up. It goes on sale real cheap, really often. So it's a, mm-hmm. it's a low investment to get into it. So I picked it up. I played it. I didn't like dig into it the way I did this time. The first time I played it, I really didn't. I just kind of played it and just let it wash over me, but I still enjoyed it. And then of course I played Hades. I also played Pyre, which is a really interesting game that I think would be fun to revisit with like the lens of doing a podcast in mind, but for the future.
Yeah. I haven't played Pyre yet. It's funny with Supergiant, man. I mean, they really knocked it out of the park with Hades. And that's not to diminish any of these other games, but you see so much of these other games in Hades.
Yeah.
And so that's like playing this game, I started to really love it. And then it gave me that Supergiant itch again. I was like, man, I kind of want to see what's up with Bastion. I didn't give that game enough time. I want to go back and check it out.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I feel like I also want to kind of go beat Dad again, go take on Hades, you know, pick up Hades.
That's right.
And see what's up.
Yeah, that was one of the big things that like stuck out to me the second time playing Transistor after I played Hades, was I was like, oh shit, look at all of this DNA that mm-hmm. started in Transistor, or probably started even before that in Bastion, that just got fine-tuned in Hades and let Hades take off the way that it did. But there's a lot of stuff in Transistor that it works basically the same, the way you can combine abilities to like alter them, you know, the perspective, the colors, all of that stuff. Like it's kind of been here the whole time. So it was really interesting going back and playing this. And This time I did dig into the story. I took the time to read all those entries about the NPCs. I took time to think about like the implications of the things you read in those terminals and all of that stuff. And I felt like that was worth it. Like that was very rewarding for me. And knowing a little bit more about the gameplay, like replaying it, helped me experiment more. There's stuff in the game that encourages you to experiment. So like I had just a really great time revisiting this. I was real happy with it.
It's interesting you bring that up, man, because I honestly think after rolling the credits on this, because I had a slightly different, this was my first playthrough. So
yeah.
To be completely honest, like I think at first I wasn't paying close enough attention to like the different stories that you can read about the different, what do they call it? The characters that you get their essence or whatever. There's a word for it that they use, but, you know, they tell you the background and everything. And I would skim over it and be like, all right, cool, cool, cool. But then about halfway through, pieces started to come together and I was like, oh man. So like, that's what's happening with this story. And, you know, and then what's cool is you can go to the start screen and you kind of can dig through all of that lore and get into it a little bit more. But I came to the realization when I rolled the credits on this one that this game, although you don't need to, I think it is built with the idea that you'll give it multiple plays, not those short multiple plays. Granted, by the time you're going all the way through Hades, you're putting in at least an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, this game does take, we said, about 6-7 hours, 8, maybe if you're really like poking around. So that's a longer playthrough, but I think it's also that sweet spot. Like I love games that are around that 10 hour time period.
Yeah.
If I can roll the credits in 10 hours, like, man, I feel like I've gotten into that world. I also feel accomplished. Like it's like, that's my sweet spot, man. Like don't get me wrong. I love long games too. And short games are great. Like shorter games are great too. But, this was like, this hit that sweet spot, but it also left me just hungry enough where I was like, I'm not a new game plus like type of dude, man. And for this game, I'm like, I might do another run. I might go and give it another 6 hours, 7 hours.
Yeah, same. This game does like kick you right into New Game Plus as soon as you roll credits and stuff. It's like, all right, so you want to go again? And today I booted it up because I needed to fill out the notes with some stuff about the NPCs. But you can't read those until you get to like those save stations, you know. And so I started playing and I like on New Game Plus, it's more difficult and you keep all your abilities and stuff. And I was like, this is still really fun. And like, it keeps getting harder, but I keep like having a better understanding of how it all works. And I kind of had to like, be like, nah, it's time to put this down for now. We got to get ready for the recording and stuff. So I get you. This is the draw for New Game Plus is there, I think. And then knowing what's going on in the story from the beginning, you know, going through it again, I think you could start to see kind of breadcrumbs and stuff that's been laid the whole time. You just didn't know what you're looking for yet.
100%. And it's another, you know, another nod to Supergiant. They do this in really all of their games, but they really do a great job of dropping you into the game, not force feeding you the story, just letting you jump into the gameplay and figure it out. And like get hooked on the gameplay pretty quickly before they roll out more and more of the story. And that was the case here. It's the case in Bastion, I think. And then also in Hades. I haven't played Pyre, so that might be a little different. But at least for that seems to be their formula and it seems to work really well.
Yeah, for sure. So let's listen to a little bit of music, everybody, from Transistor. When we come back, we're going to set up what the story is all about. In Transistor, you play as Red, who is a singer in the city of Cloudbank. Ashley Barrett provides the vocals for Red, both when you hear her voice and also when you hear her sing. And this is going to become a trend when we start listing names of people involved in the project of Transistor. There are a lot of the exact same names from all of Supergiant's games. And I think it's one of the things that lends to like a really consistent quality, but also a consistent type of like style throughout all of their games. It's because it's all the same people. They stuck around together. So Ashley Barrett, she does the vocals for Red. And the game opens with Red kneeling next to a man, and this man has a giant glowing greatsword stuck through his chest. The sword is known as the Transistor, and whatever happened here, this attack, took away Red's voice and sealed it inside of the sword along with this man's consciousness. So the man, he never gets a name. The wiki calls him Mr. Nobody. He's voiced by Logan Cunningham, who was the voice of the narrator in Bastion, one of gaming's best narrators of all time. He was also Hades in Hades, the voice role for that. So again, same people over and over again. The man talks with you throughout the game and kind of serves as a secondary character, of course, but also like this game's narrator in a different sense. He's just kind of, he talks to Red. He doesn't narrate what's happening, but that's the story delivery that you get from like these characters because Red can't talk.
Right. I was watching a YouTube video, I think NoClip. They do these crowdfunded documentaries on different video game stuff. And it was a really cool piece because they were talking to the development team at Supergiant. And apparently Red was not the original protagonist. It was the man with no name. It was kind of when they're doing their original iterations of this game. And it's always kind of fun to dig into the history of that type of thing and to see where a game ended up and where it started. But yes, very cool. And also that sword thing, I bring this up because in the development process, the sword glows when it talks, right? Or when you hear it, rather. Yeah. But when people were playtesting, they're like, oh, they're doing the Bastion narrator thing. Okay, cool. And then the team was like, oh, shit, man. Like, that's not – no, it's we need them to know the sword's doing this thing. So they figured out a way to make it work. And I thought that was just a cool little tidbit, like, in the whole development process of it. And then, you know, to your point about this team, you know, it's because you have a smaller team working on different games, you see that stuff bleed into the next game. Mm-hmm. And, of course, us as players are going to associate their work with their previous work. So it's kind of fun to know that they really wanted to make sure that, yes, it's like a narration – but it's the sword speaking to you, right? So you're not like where you're alone in Bastion, you're not alone here. You've got the sword along for the ride.
Yeah. So yeah, sometimes he talks directly to Red, and sometimes he gives like these hushed little, like I would call it like kind of a noir type narration dialogue, like these quick little things. We'll say like, this alley, it was always shadowy or something like that. And that's all you get. You move on to the next city block. Maybe you get another voice line. It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Red can't speak, but that doesn't mean that she can't communicate at all. And throughout the city, we've got these terminals around. We'll talk about the terminals a little bit more, but all of the terminals have like the ability to write and leave a comment. So Red communicates with the guy in the sword by typing in these terminals, and she'll often like type what she really thinks as a way to communicate to the guy, and then she'll delete it, and then she'll type like some politically correct answer and actually leave that as a comment in these terminals, which I thought was a nice touch. And it really, I think, resonates once you figure out like what the city of Cloud Bank is all about.
That was a cool little touch. It's the world building in this game. It's not heavy-handed or anything, and I think by the end of it, you really feel like Cloud Bank is, you know, it's a city. It's odd because folks have left, like they're not, whatever's going on with this weird event. And that's another thing with this, you know, with the story and the setup and everything is, as you know, I kind of mentioned earlier, is they're not very heavy-handed about this, right? So you start to like maybe put a little bit of your own, like, oh, this is maybe what's going on, and like, you know. So like, I think by the end of the game, you have a solid idea of what just happened. At least I feel like I do, but I don't know how much of that is just me like interjecting like some of my own thoughts of like, who knows, but we can get into that in a bit.
Yeah. It's definitely not heavy handed in the way the story is told. Like, I think the first time I played this game, I really didn't know what was going on in the story, 'cause I didn't do any of that extra work of reading those terminals, reading what they're saying, reading what Red types and thinking about why she types it, digging into all of the extra NPC backstory that you get from using those abilities in combat that are tied to the NPCs, I didn't do any of that. So you can go through this game and just enjoy it as a gameplay experience and then like as a vibe, I guess. But if you do want to dig into all of that stuff, you'll find like what I think is a really interesting story about Cloudbank, which is this like high-tech democratic utopia where people vote on basically, it seems like they vote on everything. Everything that like could be a decision is voted on. The example that you see really early in the game is every day people vote on what color they want the sky to be. Yeah. And they vote on that. And there's an NPC who you learn about who is like the sky painter. And it's, yeah, set up like this, this democratic utopia. So that theme of like democracy and how democracy can go wrong, how people can use it to take over, that stuff is explored throughout the story. And I thought that was really cool.
It is. It's also cool that the game, not only are you getting this information, but it's put into action. So like if you choose for it to be snowing, the game, it'll start snowing in the game. So it's just kind of fun to see that actually happen too and have your impact happen, like happen in real time.
Yeah, people can vote on the weather. And I'm not sure why anyone would vote for it to rain, but you can if you want to. But it is cool. It's cool to kind of see this, you know, democracy level 10,000 or something like that, where it's literally everyone votes for everything. Everything is up for a vote. And you go, a lot of times, like those terminals will ask Red to vote. They'll say, well, who's your favorite singer? Or what do you want the weather to be today? What color should the sky be? And you vote. And a lot of times it's like, okay, you voted for this one. The other one got 89% of the vote. So no.
Yeah. There's a cool thing with the percentages too. And the listener, don't hold me to this because I didn't do my research 100%. But I think that those numbers that you're like, they give, because when you vote, it gives the, it shows whatever everybody else has voted. It gives you a percentage of the vote, right? And I was deep in Reddit somewhere, and I was reading that those are tied to actual users' votes.
Oh, okay. So,
but like I said, don't hold me to that.
It could be
bringing that, you know, shady intel to the pod, but that's what podcasts are for, right?
Yeah. One of those votes that you read early on is a thing that asks who your favorite singer is. So Red won that poll like in a landslide. So if it is like user data, that makes sense. But if it's not user data, that's some world building within the story that like Red is a really popular singer in town here. In the story, the city of Cloudbank has been taken over by this army of like intelligent robots, which are called the Process in the game. And throughout the game, you'll learn more about the Process, what it is, where it came from, why it's, you know, taking over the city. Like it is kind of like infesting and taking over like entire districts of the city. So initially Red tries to escape, but instead she turns around and goes deeper into the city armed with the transistor. The transistor is like this really powerful weapon. So that's kind of like the inciting thing is the, whatever happened with, you know, the man getting stabbed through the chest with the transistor and then Red deciding to basically go deep into the city and you're off. That's the story and you'll learn more about it as you go, but I will put a pin in any more details until the spoiler section, but, just kind of like top level, like, so did you enjoy going through, did you enjoy what you learned about the story, about these characters?
I did. I think I hit you up, on Discord, dude. And I was like, I don't know. This story is like, it's half throwaway, half intriguing. I'm not really sure. And that was when I was probably about halfway through the game though. Mm-hmm. And once like, I mean, it's all kind of interconnected. It's pretty impressive. But once the combat and all the like gameplay stuff really started to flow for me, like then like started the story started to heat up too. And I started to be a little bit more invested in it. And so it was a slow burn, but once it got going, man, once we got cooking, like I was all in on it. Yeah. And I think it's really good. I think it's cool that it's not heavy end at the beginning and it stays that way throughout. But you definitely are fed more of this city, more of what's happening. I thought it was done really well, man. I thought, you know, full marks, good story.
Yeah. A lot of like the optional stuff too, I think really helps fill in who these people are and how the city worked. And there's an antagonist that, like, other than the process, there's an antagonist that you are kind of dealing with throughout the game, and especially as it gets later on, and learning about them and learning about their motivations was really, really interesting, unexpected. I think Supergiant did a really good job with like giving you light storytelling throughout, but then there's a ton if you want to put in the work. And like I said, in the kind of top of the show, I felt rewarded by putting in that work, because I thought like the depth of detail that they went to was pretty interesting all the way down.
Totally. And I got to give another gold star to Supergiant, because like, this is like a science fiction game. Like, it's presumably takes place in like a futuristic dystopia, and you know, it's not cyberpunk. Like, I think at the beginning in our elevator pitch, I call it like noir punk or something, because it definitely has a noir vibe. A lot of that comes from the voice of the transistor, you know. But that's a hard vibe to nail and to like get people hooked in on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like this idea of like, because if you do futuristic setting, like, it's impossible for us not to look at our current situation and like current things, and then kind of like, you know, to make that fantasy is different, right? Because you can kind of go wherever with fantasy. When you go into a future setting, you have to have elements that are like still somewhat tied to today that are relatable. I mean, you don't have to, but it's like, it's easier to buy into, right?
Yeah.
As a player or a reader or a watcher, whatever you're doing, as us consuming the media, it's a lot easier to buy into if that's the case. And man, I think we'll talk about it more in a bit, but Gen Z and the rest of the team did a really great job of, you know, making sure that the player is able to buy into this world, not only through the storytelling, but through the visuals as well.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you see future sci-fi neon colors and your brain immediately is like, oh yeah, cyberpunk. Cyberpunk's hot right now. But like you said, you're right. This is not a cyberpunk game. It just kind of looks like it.
But also just soft enough where it's like not though, dude. Like, which is cool.
Yeah. We can talk about that art now. So you mentioned the main artist is Gen Z, as in the other Supergiant games, you know, that theme of everyone staying on board, coming up again. So we have like that vibrant, bright kind of like neon. It looks like cyberpunk, like we said. Again, really pops on the Switch OLED, but it's got a lot of, you know, there's a lot of black, and then the contrast with all of those kind of neon colors, the blues and greens and red especially. And then the contrast when you go somewhere where the process is just like this flat white and black, like a little bit of red, but like this just, I don't know, this boring kind of dead feeling compared to the vibrancy of the rest of the city.
Right. And then you bring up the process again, and I have to note that like us, after you playing the game twice now and me playing it once, like, honestly, I was like, why do you keep talking about the process? Like, what is this process thing?
Yeah.
So like you spoke to it a little bit earlier. It's like this virus that's almost taking over the city. But it's like, it's changing, like, it's kind of controlling these different like robots that you fight throughout. And then it controls different, you know, all the enemies, but then it like spreads out into the city and the buildings. So even like after a bit of time into the game, you start to see that contrast in color. And that's kind of how they show that like a lot of these like darker buildings or whatever are taken over by like this white look that's very distinct for the process. Cause a lot of the enemies are also like a white color as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like a sickness. Like if you see something that's just like covered in like mold or something like that.
Right.
Definitely. The character models, I think, are also like really, of course, extremely super giant. Like if you've played a super giant game, you can picture what like the character models kind of look like. They're portraits that go up. Mm-hmm. The game is from like a really zoomed out, mostly isometric perspective. But when you go into the menus and you look at like the portraits for the characters, they're all just these really vibrant, really distinct looking people. There's not that many of them. Like there might be 15 or so, you know, in the whole game. So all of them are really distinct. I think that also that isometric perspective lets you see all of these interesting like architectural designs throughout totally. The city of Cloudbank and skyboxes and stuff like that. It's all real cool.
And it's actually super impressive, the fact that it's isometric and in a city. Doing something isometric and having tall buildings is nearly impossible to do. So it's like really interesting if you look at it and kind of see how they figured it out, how to make it. I mean, you still get it still gives you the idea there's tall buildings because maybe they're further back, like in your perspective line or whatever. There are certain instances of the game where a tall building will obstruct your view a little bit, but not overly so where it's annoying. It just adds to the feel of like, okay, we're going up this tall tower and there's some other big buildings in the way. But I thought that was pretty cool when I was thinking back about it. Like, because the fact that they were able to like do an isometric game in the middle of what's presumably this huge city is pretty cool feat in itself.
Yeah, none of those like visual tricks that make something in the foreground like transparent so that you can see your character or something. Like you're right, like something will block your view if you, you know, run up behind it and it's in the foreground there. But yeah, I didn't have a lot of trouble like finding the path forward because there was a building in the way or something like that. So the level design supports that perspective that they did. There's also some sections that either switch to like a side-scrolling view or something more trippy entirely. Like there's some very visually, trippy is the word I'm going to stick with, like sections kind of peppered in every now and then where you're like, whoa, really went wild on this little like 1 minute section of the game.
Yeah, it's cool. They have the cutscene deals are pretty sweet too. I mean, you mentioned the portraits are all really detailed. I always love it when a game totally flips whatever view they're going for and change, like with the cutscenes, I guess, but like, it's always kind of cool to see. And they have some cool parallax going around when like, you know, Red and the Transistor are driving or riding their boat or doing whatever they're on, like having the little monologues, but it's cool, man. It's a whole vibe.
Also of note in Transistor, of course, is the music, which is like one of the stars of every Supergiant game. I was reading an article, I can't remember where it was from, but they described the music in Supergiant as another character in all of their games, and I totally agree with that. Music by Darren Korb, who, you guessed it, has done the music for all of Supergiant's games, and recently got into doing a lot of voice acting for Supergiant in Hades. He described the soundtrack of Transistor as old-world electronic post-rock. So there's a lot of like electric guitars, bass guitar is like really fuzzy in this game. I dig it a lot. Keyboard and drums, but then I think the old world part of that, he added in a lot of kind of acoustic instruments too, accordions in some places. But it definitely has this kind of post-rock vibe to it, where you'll just have like a rhythm or like a riff that's repeating over and over again. A lot of electric guitar, but not like playing chords. It's more like single string, like plucking stuff that just kind of has this melody that's going on loop as you're going through the city streets. And then it's really great. And it's dynamic too. That's the other thing I love about it is picks up during combat. When you open the menus, it fades away till it's just the bass guitar when you're in the menus. I love stuff like that. It's a good touch.
It's great, man. And I think, you know, hats off to Ashley Barrett, who I think does the vocals.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, you mentioning that the music itself is a character. That's a fun little thought for me. And then like her voice in this, you know, she voices, well, she's Red's singing voice, but then also, you know, Red, as you mentioned, at the head, like, loses her voice. So there's this cool mechanic that the game does where she hums, right? Mm-hmm. So when she, we'll get into it when we start talking about the gameplay, but when you're doing the turn-based combat, you can actually hear Red humming as she plans out the stuff. And I thought that was a cool little thing too.
Yeah. Some of the songs too have, they're like full songs with vocals and stuff like that. And there's not that many of them, but when they are in there, they're really powerful songs, including the one at the end of the game called Paper Boats, which is just like, it's chef kiss. It's so good. The work of the music, of course, but her vocals are so emotional and strong in that song and in the other ones too, in here. She's a great singer, and mm-hmm. it contributes a lot to the soundtrack, even though the songs with vocals like that are kind of few and far between.
It's also, I hate to compare it to Hades all the time, it's really easy for me to do. But, I do think that Hades has the tendency, Hades is more rock and roll almost, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has a tendency to really get you amped up. And you mentioned the dynamic, soundtrack, which is true. I would say, though, it was almost more ambient for me. So, like, the overall, like, it just, the music did a really good job of, like, bringing me into this world that I was living in as Red or whatever. And it definitely, it's cool with the comment. It definitely gets going and stuff like that. But it was almost more subtle. It was like, it was done so well that it just worked well. Like, it didn't seem out of place. It felt like it was supposed to be a part of this city. It made total sense. It wasn't, didn't feel out of place at all, but it also didn't get me going like, some of those Hades bangers, but still, I thought it was very, very good.
Yeah, definitely not. It doesn't have that kind of heavy metal vibe of the Hades soundtrack. It's definitely more relaxed. It does get into more of like that ambient mood. Cause again, a lot of it, when you're going through the city, you'll just have like a short melody that's repeating right. over and over again. I like when there is stuff going on with like the villains or with the process, especially there's some like really like high up on the guitar, we'll say, like the higher notes, there's some, sure. some dissonance that they use to kind of throw you off guard and have you be uncomfortable with the situation that you're in. I mean, what can we say? Like, I don't think that I've talked to anybody who is not like a giant fan of Darren Korb's music. If you play the Supergiant games, it's like one of the standout things about them. And again, someone who's been there the whole time, like it's remarkable to have that kind of consistency. Like, I feel like no one has that in gaming. Right. Like, gaming's so fucking volatile all the time. But this, like, the quality of writing, the art, and then the music all together, like, that's like the core of Supergiant. Like, I feel like if the same people are involved, no matter what they make, you can count on those things to kind of continue that vibe.
I mean, that's one of the beauties of, having a smaller team, especially a smaller team that's got the juice,
Yeah, yeah, so. They got the juice for sure. Combat in Transistor is, again, from that isometric perspective. So if you're coming to this because you played Hades first, you'll be familiar with the perspective, and you can run around and do it as an action game. You map up to 4 abilities on your face buttons. They're called functions in the game, and those can be customized to your liking within a limit called memory, which limits how many things you can equip. You can equip things as just straight up like abilities. They'll do the thing when you press that button. So there's an attack called Breach that's a long-range attack. Crash is a short-range attack that lowers defense. Like, they might have different properties like that, too. There's one called Jaunt that lets you do a dash. There's one called Switch that will charm an enemy to fight on your side for a few seconds. Stuff like that. Where, like, the mixing and matching really comes in is you can take those abilities and use them to modify the ones that are mapped on the face buttons. So, for example, if you put Switch as a modifier on Crash, for example, now every time you use Crash, whatever you hit will then be charmed and fight on your side. And I want to say there's like, I didn't write it down, but maybe, yeah, 16 to 20 of these abilities total that you mix and match, whether it's, you know, on the buttons, whether used as modifiers, or you can also equip them as passive effects.
Yep.
And you need to use them as all three of those to unlock all of the lore associated with that attack, because you get all of these attacks by meeting NPCs in the game, and they're all associated with a particular NPC. And so if you want to learn about that NPC's backstory, like basically who they are, then you need to use them as one of these kind of roles in combat. If you want to learn about how they got involved in the story, you need to use them a second way. And then if you want to learn how their story ends, then you need to use them the third way. So this encourages you to mix them up, use them in all different forms. It's really, really smart, I think, because if you have someone who's engaged in the story, they're going to want to mix up these abilities.
Yeah, I love that, man. Our experiences are slightly different because I didn't get as deep into those the stories of each of the NPCs. Mm-hmm. So when you pick up, I think they call it their trace or whatever. So that's like you pick up their trace and that gives you the new ability. So I think when and if and when I ever go back and play this again, I definitely want to dig in that. I didn't notice it because it does. There's some visual cues that when you start using it, I think it will give you a little blinky thing on the start screen or whatever the function screen is that tell you that there's new information. So I did go in and check out them sometimes, but to the same effect, like there's a cool thing. You don't have like a health bar in this game. Those up to four different abilities that you can use when you get hit, or I guess there's kind of a health bar, but when that goes down, it removes one of your abilities, right?
Yeah.
And then as all of your abilities are depleted, then you die. You have to go back to the last save point or whatever. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting about that, and it actually gets to a very similar effect of what you're talking about with the story, is that if you lose an ability, all of the one, you're not allowed to use that ability anymore, or nor are you. But the thing is like that ability maybe you can't use, but you can go in and you have more abilities. So you go in and you start mixing and matching these different pieces and finding out different ways to make these, you know, different actions. And you basically are encouraged and almost forced not to get stuck on the same build out.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like, I think it's possible for you to play the game and not really mess around with switching things up too much. Like if you're good at the game, if you're good at the combat, you're not going to lose the abilities very often. But my first time playing it, that happened to me at least a handful of times. So I was
you saying I'm not good, bud. You say I'm not good at this game.
I might be. I don't know. I think the first time I played it, it happened a handful of times. So like, you're right, you have the choice. You can either play handicapped with only three possible abilities, or you're forced to like bring something off the bench and start using that.
Right.
And then like after a set number of combat encounters, I think it is, the one that you lost will come back. You'll be able to use it again.
Yeah, you have to go and you check in at, what do they call those little checkpoints? You have to hit at least
access
two of
points.
Them. So once you hit like a couple of access points, it'll let you use them again. I have the tendency to approach a lot of games like a tank. Like that's just my play style for a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'll find like a really powerful moveset that will work for me. But that's just, you know, if one of those gets depleted, then I have to go in and kind of rejigger everything to figure out something else that works. And it was a fun process to like, not the process, but it was a fun way to figure out like, you know, different ways to play it. And, you know, cause I think there's actually like 20, 21 of these different moves that you can use. And then you start adding the different modifiers. Like there's a lot of cool stuff that you can get going in this. And, you know, naturally I was like, there's gotta be something that's just OP'd and like everybody's using. And I think there are a handful of like, you know, favorites that people use, but it's truly, everything was like, I felt like was pretty well balanced and it suits a lot of different play styles. So even though that I'm traditionally a tank, like you can figure out like different play styles to like, and then you kind of learn how to use that. And then it's kind of another level to this game where it's like, it's keeps it fresh the whole way through because you're kind of trying these different things.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of customization available, whether you're struggling and you need to experiment to like find something better, or if you're just like me and want to mix it up because you want to learn about the NPCs, there's a lot of reasons to mix it up and there's a lot of ways that you can mix it up. There are things that I found to be like very, very powerful. Like the one that charms enemies to fight on your side was kind of essential for me.
I use that one a bit as well. I think Bounce is really nice. Call was really nice. There's a lot of, there's some fun ones. What is it? What is the, there's another layer to this combat system. And it's another very super giant thing to do. It kind of, what is it called though? There's not modifiers. It's that other menu that you get and you unlock throughout.
I want to say it's called like limiters or something like that.
Yeah, the limiters, dude. So that was a really interesting thing too, because basically what the different limiters that you unlock do, it's a whole nother tree to learn, but you can activate these by choice. And if you do that, it will give you like a certain 2-4% like basically boost in how much like points that you're getting when you're like fighting enemies or whatever.
Yeah, it gives you an experience boost because you get experience and level ups in this game too.
Yep. So like it'll give you that experience boost, but it's totally optional because at the same time you'll get that boost, but then it's also going to nerf something. It's going to make something harder for you, change something in the gameplay. And I think that's a really cool way to approach this because for me, like I was turning a bunch of those on at first. That's probably why I got all those, like, you know, that's probably why I always had to lose all my stuff. I had all those like deals going. But the thing is like that would help my experience points go, like I would like gain a lot of experience points. I was able to level up faster.
Yeah.
But then I reached a certain point in the game where I was like, all right, I'm going to turn these off because I'm starting to struggle a little bit. It's not as easy as it was before. But by that point, I felt pretty strong with my build and I had learned the combat system where I was happy to take those off.
Yeah, I didn't really mess with those. I didn't mess with them in Hades either. Hades was difficult enough without those things. But, you know, we talk about things that were carried forward that feel like they started in Transistor and then became like a core thing in Hades as well. A lot of stuff from this gameplay. One thing that did not make the trip forward in time is, so like we set this up, like you run around, you can use your abilities, play it as an action game, but like it's kind of slow. Your stuff recharges really slowly. It's not very smooth if you play it that way. What you're supposed to do is you press a button to pause. And when the game is paused, you can issue up like a string of actions governed by like an AP system. Like, you know, you have so much you can do in one turn. Like running takes time out of your turn limit. Using different abilities will take different, you know, sections of this bar. And once the bar is filled, you can't do anything else when it's paused. Then you unpause it and Red will do all of these things while the enemies are moving in slow motion. Sometimes like if you hit an enemy, you'll knock them far away. So it's possible to like miss with the later things in your combo if you don't predict that very well. So it's not like you are completely overpowered, but this does not feel optional to me. It feels like you have to do this. And frankly, this is really, really fun. Like setting up and strategizing, like I'm gonna pause, I'm gonna hit this dude, it's gonna bounce and hit that other guy, then I'm gonna dash behind the other guy, backstab him for extra damage. Like there's a lot going on in the combat. There's usually a lot of enemies, and then later on you get to a lot of enemies that have a ton of hit points and they hit really hard. So your strategy is not always just straight up offense during this turn. Like you might pause it so you can get the fuck out of there and buy yourself a little bit more time.
It's a fascinating gameplay mechanic. And honestly, it's one of the reasons I think I love this game so much. And at first I just didn't understand it. So I didn't like it at first. I was like, what's going on with this? Cause I really was approaching this game with my Hades brain.
Right.
And I wanted to just like run through and you know, do that action, you know, RPG deal, but really, like, that pause mechanic, like, it turns it into a turn-based RPG, which is really cool. And I think you're 100% correct. And I think, you know, from some of the stuff I was watching and reading, the developers would agree, like, this game is made in a very interesting way where you are definitely encouraged. Like, you really do need to stop things and plan things out. Like, the baddies are tough, dude. They, they're fast and they're powerful. Yeah. You know, some capital G gamers out there might be able to take them down, but, you know, me with my lowercase G, I was quite happy to pause time. And that's another beautiful thing about it. You're not timed on that either. Like, it's truly turn-based. And what else I thought was really cool about that is you can, cause for me, at least I would be in this, like, you have this, like, your adrenaline's pumping because you're in this crazy fight. You stop everything. So I'm still moving kind of fast and like planning out my moves. But then I'm like, oh, fuck, that's not going to work. And you can actually recall whatever you've laid out to reset things. And I think that's just so cool. And you can also, it shows you little stats, like, you know, very like turn-based RPG things. So like it'll show you if your placement on whatever particular move you're trying is going to take away this amount of damage. And you're like, I think I can probably get something better. So you can take that back and you can try something else before you actually activate that that sequence. It's just such a cool thing, man. And it's actually like, it's just, like I said, some of the capital G gamers out there might be able to do this without stopping time, but you're really encouraged too. And I think the baddies in themselves are developed to really encourage this type of gameplay. And I've never played a game like that. It's cool.
Yeah, it's real cool. I think a lot of your functions are not actually available outside of this like pause screen. So yeah, you can dash around and there might be some, I think like maybe one of the modifiers lets you use some things outside of like that pause screen.
Right. It's interesting. There's one, your friend, I don't remember what it's called, but you summon a couple of your little dog homies, little puppers or whatever. Yeah. And that one you can't do on the, when you pause things, it has to be live action, which is this kind of interesting little things that this game does.
Yeah, you're right. Like the enemies move really fast and they hit really hard. Like Red, even, you know, when you level up, Red doesn't have a ton of health. Like, I don't know if you can just sit there and tank stuff. So a lot of combat encounters, even when using this like pause and planning strategy, I would still get hit because after you execute all your moves, there's a cooldown and you are in real time and you just have to like run. And there's always like these barricades in the combat arena. So you go and hide behind those. The enemies can destroy those. So you can't camp out there forever. And
I think.
Yeah, you can destroy them too. Yeah. But yeah, this, like the depth of strategy that are opened up by this, like choosing which ones to move. Maybe you have like a really strong attack, but your planning like time will only accommodate like that one attack and then like a dodge and then moving a little bit. Like you, sometimes you really have to like purposely choose what you're going to use to fit in that time limit. So sometimes like that big attack that takes most of your bar will be worth it. And a lot of times it's not, even though it's your most powerful thing. So yeah, tons of strategy here. And when I started playing on New Game Plus, it's basically like that you start with all your abilities and the enemies start at the end game level. So like the first combat encounter in New Game Plus is as hard as a regular encounter at the end of the game. And so I was like, oh shit, like I can only imagine where this goes. Like when you get to the end of a New Game Plus, like I can imagine like really stretching your strategy brain out like in this combat system.
Totally. And that was one of the things I think, you know, why it didn't quite click for me is because I wasn't leaning into the, you know, the strategy. And I just hadn't quite figured out the mechanics of the turn-based stuff yet. Cause it's like, I mean, they tell you what to do, but it's not, again, just like the story, it's not super heavy handed. And, you know, it just takes a little bit of time to learn. But once you figure it out, like once you get cooking, man, good shit.
Yeah, this is really, really good. And so it looks like an action game. And I wonder how many people like approach it like you did, where it's like, oh, it's an action game. And I played Hades or I played Bastion before this. Those are just straight up action games. And I wonder how many people would play this and be like, this is a shitty action game. Like what the fuck's going on? And then you hit that pause button. Like it teaches you, I think, to do it, but you hit that pause button and then you're like, oh, I'm so powerful. I have so many options. And then you add in all the customization with the functions and stuff. And it's really like, if you have strategy brain, like turn-based tactics brain, I think mm-hmm. there's a lot to really like here. So anything else about the combat system here or the gameplay in general that you found interesting?
There is the one other bit is similar to those polls that we were talking about. When you go in and you start picking your different, you know, your different move sets or whatever we're calling them, your different functions.
Yeah.
It also gives you a percentage of like, and I'm not 100% sure about this, if it's from the user base or maybe it's a percentage that I was using it, but it gives you a percentage of, there is a percentage of use on there. And I'm not sure if that's from the community or just me. And because the ones that you get early on in the game are definitely heavier. They're like more around like 40% or something like that. And the other ones tend to be lower and some are around zero. So maybe perhaps that number is coming from my own gameplay. And I thought that was just another little cool piece of, you know, the little numbers that they're throwing in for you to look at. And it helps with the planning. And for me, when I was building out stuff, I got to a point in the game where I was like, well, I started pushing the limits and testing things, but it was like another nice little litmus test to be like, oh yeah, like, cause there's a lot, man, like 21 different functions is a lot to manage. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh yeah, that's like crash is easy to remember, but like, you know, for whatever, like call is one that I really like obviously, cause it's got this number next to it.
Yeah, true. I guess one thing that would like teach you, cause you, like you said, there are a lot of functions and you get to a point where you'll switch them up, or at least like I kind of felt like, oh, I picked up a new thing. I got to find out what this does, but combat's really tough. So I don't know if I want to throw it in there and like hamstring myself in the next combat or something. So, one cool thing they do is there is this kind of like beach dimension that you can go to.
The back door.
Yeah. The back door. And, in that they have these combat arena challenges and there are different types. There's one where you can start with a set, like a preset set of abilities, and it'll just say, okay, take everything out, but these are your abilities. You can't change anything. And they'll constantly mix that up and throw in those things that you never use so that you get a chance to see what they do. And a lot of those really, I was like impressed by them in those challenges. So I made them a part of the regular rotation. There's other like speed challenges. There's like, just survive for 2 minutes type challenges. There's a lot. And I did most of these, like I did pretty much all that were available. They're really fun.
I think I did the same, man. I think it was one of those things when I found the first one, I was like, oh, this cool little area, kind of weird and like nice little challenge. But those, the back door, that little beach area is actually what really opened up the game for me because it was it's like a playground. Challenges, but then it's like, it also forced me to, because they're giving you certain functions that you have to use for whatever challenge, like it made me play with different combos that I wasn't playing with in my actual gameplay.
Yeah.
And some of those challenges are hard, dude. So I had to do them, you know, I'd lose and I had to keep on trying, cause I'm not going to let the game win. I gotta win eventually. So, you know, so that's actually how I ended up getting good at this game is I was just hanging out in the backdoor area, doing the different challenges. And then you also increase your experience points there. So it like levels up your character. I would love to see like a breakdown of the time that I spent in the backdoor versus like the actual like game world. Cause I bet you it's maybe it's not as balanced as I'm thinking, but like, I definitely felt like I spent a lot of time back there because there's a certain, you know, every time you find one of those doors, it allows you to do, it varies, like whether it's 1, 3, 4, cause you, there's like maybe 7 doors within that area and they do either the, like you're saying, the speed test or once it's like an endurance thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you, and then of course, like, I'm like, well, I did that one. I got to do this one. Oh, I'm getting XP at these things. I'm going to do them all. All right. Yeah, I like close all the doors.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I would have done them if you didn't get like real experience points for doing them, but you do. So like, that's another reason to go do them. But once I was drawn in by getting experience points, I realized like just how fun they are, like as little strategy challenges. There's one also where you have to kill all the enemies in one turn of like the pausing and planning. And that was always really fun to just figure out like how much can you stretch this to get all of this done in one turn. Those are really satisfying when you get it.
It's a really cool way to teach players like how to play the game, to be honest. Like it's almost a sandbox that when you leave that area, like you're equipped with all this new knowledge and like, well, shit, I'm going to try that. You know, I'm going to try and get that to work in the actual game.
It's great. Great little touch in there. And I just have like pretty much nothing but good things to say about this this game. Like I'm really impressed by it. So let's listen to a little bit more music. And when we come back, we'll give our wrap up thoughts. We'll do a little bit of housekeeping and then hit that spoiler section. So in this section, we always just kind of wrap up any thoughts in summary, stray things that you want to collect, but then also answer the question, who would you recommend Transistor to, Alex?
Oh, man. I would recommend Transistor to anybody that has maybe played Hades. I think that's a good starting point. Be ready to have it not be Hades.
Yeah.
But I think if you've played Hades and enjoyed Hades, like I think it like Supergiant Systems is a fascinating like development team to me, because of what we've been talking about, the different DNA that you see in all their games, and like playing Hades made me want to play Transistor. Playing Transistor makes me want to go play Bastion. It's just so cool. It's so cool to see the different pieces that carry over to the next ones. But you know, if action RPGs are your thing, there's a piece of this game that you're really going to like. If turn-based RPGs are your thing, you're going to really like pieces of this game. Like I think it's just different enough, like to you know, have its own flavor, and I think that's intriguing. But so I guess that's who I would tell to play this game.
Yeah, fans of Supergiant's other work, no matter what it is, I think that, again, because a lot of the same people, the same creative forces are behind this as their other games, if you're a fan of their other games, there's going to be something that you're going to like in this game too. And being their only game that is like turn-based like this, like Pyre has like a bit of planning because you're playing it's a sports game, you know, kind of. So there's a bit of that planning in here, but this is a strategy.
I'm so excited
game.
To play Pyre now.
Yeah, it's real interesting, man. And the story's really cool, and like the music's great. It's, you know, a lot of the stuff that you can kind of bank on with Supergiant. Like they haven't missed yet, in my opinion. They take really big creative swings, and for a while they were on this track where every game was very different from the previous game. And obviously now at the time of recording, they're making Hades 2. And part of me is like, well, I wonder what they would have done, you know, if Hades was like a mid success and they could fund their next game and try something completely different. I'm sure they'd come up with something cool, but like, I can't fault them for making a sequel to one of the most successful games of the last like 5 years or so. I can't get mad at them for it. So.
It's interesting though, because them as a developing studio, like that was like one of their, like they wore that badge of honor, like that they weren't making Bastion 2, because Bastion 2 was, you know, a decent breakout hit, but they're like, no, we're going to do Transistor.
Yeah.
And so my hope, I'm going to play Hades 2, of course. But my hope is that they continue to push the envelope. You know, my hope that a lot of these, you know, everybody on the team, as many as it can, you know, stay friends, stay coworkers, and keep making cool shit. Because I think in today's climate of video games, this is what I personally want more of. I want people to push the envelope on gameplay. I want like this beautiful art in my games. I think it's super cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. So this is a pretty easy recommendation to play Transistor, especially if you are either new to Supergiant because you played Hades, or like if you've tried out a couple things but just missed on Transistor, give it a try. I think it's a really, really good game. Easy recommendation for people who like kind of uncovering a story, for people who like that turn-based tactics aspect, and then people who like the Supergiant aesthetic, the music and the art. There's a lot here.
And it's like 7 hours, dude. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that just adds to the pitch. That's the cherry on top. Whenever you're trying to like recommend a game to somebody, you put out all these like wonderful points and they're like, yeah, but is that shit 60 hours long? No, Transistor's under 10 hours.
Right.
And you can get it on sale for like $3 like every other month, you know? So yeah, easy, easy. Alex, let's kick off housekeeping by talking about Lo-Five Gaming. Tell everybody about the show and what they can expect over there.
Yeah, man. Lo-Five Gaming is a podcast that I do with my little brother, Luke. Book club style. So we pick one game per month. We go back and forth on who picks the game. Mm-hmm. Sometimes new games of the moment. A lot of the times also crossing off a classic from the backlog. Mm-hmm. Take the month to play that game. And then we convene. We talk about it on our Discord. Then we convene and talk about our experience. And that is in essence what it is. So it's a monthly back club book club. You can head to lo5gaming.com to kind of see all things Lo-Five Gaming and get the pod there. I also write some blog posts from time to time there, and I'm cooking on some other content. Mm-hmm. So check us out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good stuff. Like we said on that other episode that you guys guested on, obviously you two are brothers, so you got a good dynamic between the two of you. It's always fun to listen. And like you said, a good mix of stuff, like at the time of recording, the most recent episode was Majora's Mask, so one of those old classics out of the backlog. Mm-hmm. But before that, stuff like Jusant, which kind of took everybody by storm for about a month or so. And, you know, a lot of stuff like that. Greece, going back further in the backlog, Hades and Red Dead Redemption 2 and all kinds of cool stuff. So,
yeah, I think we're on now. So by the time this comes out, it's either we'll be right around publishing or it'll be close. But anyways, we're working on the next one is Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, which is fun first episode we ever dropped was Prince of Persia from 1989.
Oh, hell yeah.
full circle, bud.
nice. Yeah. Yeah. Highly recommended that people check out Lo-Five Gaming. Oh, it's always a good listen. You two are a good hang. So we'll put links.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. We'll put links down in the show notes for everybody to easily find the stuff that Alex and Luke are doing. And time to talk about myself for a minute. I would really appreciate if you would leave a rating and review. Thank you for listening up until this point, by the way. I would really appreciate if you left a rating and review if your podcast platform allows it, like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Podcast Addict. You can also join the Discord server if you want to come in and talk about Transistor, you want to talk about Supergiant's other games, or if you just want to join a cool community of people. The Discord server is a cool place. There's an invite link down in the show notes. I also have another podcast called A Top 3 Podcast, where we do top 3 lists. We draft weird topics. That's a fun time. And then finally, if you want to support the show monetarily, you can do that at patreon.com/realDaveJackson. And oh yeah, this game is on the show partly because it won a poll on Patreon. I do monthly polls for games to appear on the show, and Transistor won that poll. I should have shouted that out much earlier than this, but here we are. So thank you to everyone who voted for Transistor and gave us the chance to play it. I love that.
Yes. I'm going to echo real quick, Dave. Fun Discord, fun Patreon. Dave's putting out really cool content in the Patreon, a lot of cool stuff. So go check all that stuff out.
Yeah, 100%.
And give him that rating he's talking about, because you know what? His puppers will get a treat.
That's true. Yeah. If you give a rating on your podcast platform of choice, I will give my little miniature schnauzer a blueberry, and he loves blueberries. So
that's worth 5 stars right there, bud.
Hell yeah, it is. We are going to take a break. And when we come back, full spoilers begin for Transistor.
Just skin and bones, nothing inside, sleeping alone.
All right, Alex and I are back, and it's full spoiler time for Transistor. And we'll start out with kind of that inciting incident in the game that I was kind of tiptoeing around what was going on. So the antagonistic force that we didn't talk about at all in the non-spoiler section, I'm not sure that it's a giant spoiler, but there's this group of officials called the Camerata, and it's a small group. I think there's four of them, which was by design. They said that was part of their plan, was to keep the group small. And the Camerata were trying to make change in Cloudbank because they hated this constant voting, constant change. Basically, like, I think one of the quotes from the Camerata is, when everything changes, nothing changes. And, you know,
like that's their thing. That's
like, yeah. Yeah. So like everything in the city basically changes on the whims of the people, and the Camerata didn't like that. So you kind of uncover their story of how they went about trying to make this change. But at the beginning, you pick up the people who killed the man with the transistor. That was the Camerata. And more specifically, one of Red's friends named Sybil is part of the Camerata and was like a mole to help them get close to Red.
Sybil, that dog, dude.
Yeah, yeah. And so they tried to kill Red, but the man jumped in front of the attack and kind of saved her. And then I guess the Camerata got spooked and ran away when that happened or something like that. And that's what kind of sets off the rest of the game.
Yeah, so they would have lost the transistor at that point, which is, this gets a little heady, but like the transistor is controlling, or has the ability to control, like all of the stuff that's going on in the city, right? So to my understanding is when they tried to kill Red with the transistor, like there's a cool cutscene. It doesn't happen at the beginning of the game. It's maybe midpoint, mm-hmm. Where you see that scene where they throw the sword and the unknown, you know, the person who has no name kind of jumps in front of Red. And takes the sword instead of her. But then from there, then everybody kind of, they parts ways, but Red ends up with the transistor, which is a big piece of this story as well, because not Asher, but Royce wants it back. This is his whole deal.
Yeah. They want to get the transistor back. So that's why, like, they're kind of after Red, but it's not like you're not like going through the streets fighting the members of the Camerata or something. Like, you're right. Kind of on their heels trying to catch up with them once you figure out that they're responsible for what's going on. Right. And a cool thing about the transistor that you learn is that the transistor is this magic sword that can create stuff, like create matter out of nowhere. There's a part later where you use the transistor to make a bridge, and it's kind of like, that's part of its ultimate power. But if you kill someone with the transistor, their soul gets stuck inside of it. And so that's why the man's voice is inside of the transistor, and Red's voice is also stuck in there for reasons that I'm not super clear on, but it's also
I'm stuck not sure in there. Either.
Yeah.
That's also how you're picking up those traces we mentioned earlier, is it absorbs the trace from the dead NPCs that you find along the way. Yeah, super heady, dude. It's cool. That's like another thing about this story, though, is that like they give you just enough pieces, but it's also just obscure enough, and there's just enough holes where you're kind of left to your own devices a little bit.
Yeah. So like the early portion of the game, you're kind of just like figuring out what's going on and kind of following the Camerata, trying to catch up with them. And I guess one of like the biggest things that starts happening is, I forget why this started happening, but the voice in the sword starts to get really weak and like staticky and distorted. And it's not until you kill one of these like huge process monsters that it actually gets healed. Yeah, the spine. It's like a big snake creature.
Yeah, it's wild. Like the tail has like a very sharp end to it, and it's huge. It's like gigantic, and it will just come out and attack you. But it's that's another weird thing. They don't really tell you exactly what the connection is, but it's like the spine is basically like this, like, from what I was able to put together, it's this big, it's like a process, but it's like almost like a super mutated process. Like it's gone beyond like, you know, what we're seeing in the other stuff. And it's having an effect on the transistor itself, which is interesting. And I think that's where you get the fluctuations with the voice and everything. And it's almost like, It changes color too. The sword changes like a red instead of being its traditional green. It's interesting storytelling.
Yeah. So the Camerata's whole thing, and I think this is really interesting, and it's something that you can completely miss. I think you can play this whole game and just kind of like, if you click through or like half listen to the dialogue and you don't read anything extra, I think you can miss like what the whole point of the Camerata is. And they kind of have like a sympathetic side to them, I feel like, because again, they don't like this like ultra democracy in Cloudbank. They feel like there's no way to make positive permanent change of any kind, whether it's evil or, you know, noble. You can't do it because people are voting on literally everything every single day. So everything changes too much. And I wonder, like, I don't know if like the people in Cloudbank would be sick of this too. Like they're like, man, can the cloud just be the same color 2 days, or the sky just be the same color 2 days in a row? Like, right. Is that too much to ask for or something? But
It's interesting because they're definitely the baddies. You know, we're meant not to like them. But at the same time, it's one of those instances in storytelling where they set out to do something noble. At least that was what they had in their minds. But then as the story progresses, you know, even they, I think, realize that they fucked up.
Yeah. So what happened was the process, which is, you know, they're the monsters that you're fighting. These robots are like this corrupting kind of force. The process was the mechanism that things would change in the city, I think. It was the mechanism for like changing the sky. It's like the program behind it all or something like that.
Right.
But the Camerata tried to control it and then lost control of it. And so that's why it's spreading out like this, because it broke containment or something. And I think that the Camerata trying to use the transistor for their own means, I think that's explained as like why they lost control of the process. Like the transistor was keeping them in check somehow, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that checks out, man. Like it's
yeah. But what I thought was cool about this, aside from learning about their motivations and how, like you said, like how noble, like their beginning motivation was, because I think that, well, I don't know how you feel. I think that this is like a cool representation of like, yeah, everyone loves the idea of democracy, but like they took democracy too far in Cloudbank, I think. So when you look at the Camerata, you're like, yeah, what their initial goal kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it's definitely supposed to be this uber perfect democracy. And that's like, I mean, it's kind of the trouble with democracy and a lot of these institutions in itself is, in theory, sure, this is great, but in practice, is it? And I think that's and I also think that, you know, we're humans, and I mean, this is a video game and these are characters, but you know, the humans in these characters, like they want to control, and they're a little selfish as well. So like Royce is kind of the main baddie at the end, and like, you know, you can tell that he may have had noble intent, but he's also like that intent has also been, you know, the water's been poisoned because he obviously also wants a little bit of control. He wants it his way, you know? So it's not truly democracy at that point.
Right. So it's like the starting state, like that hyper democracy, that's not working for them. I'm sure there are other people in the city that are like, hey, again, like, you know, I'm tired of the weather changing like this, just depending on what people are feeling like every day or something like that. But then they try to grab power, and we're not really sure like if they were going to use it for good or not, because they failed pretty quickly. Like they lost control pretty quickly, it feels like.
It's a little inconclusive exactly why they targeted Red, but I, you know, there's a point that they had like a short list of the folks that they wanted to target. And I think from what I was able to gather is like Red had a very, I mean, she's super influential. So I think they were trying to take that power from her. And by the way the sword works, I guess that would maybe like they would take on her influence, and then maybe, I guess, well, that's the whole point of taking the voice. I guess that's what it is like taking your voice, taking your influence.
Yeah. So that's their plan, right? Like, so part of their plan is they're going to try to use the process for their own gain, but like their democratic takeover, because they want to win support from the people, is to use these influential people around Cloudbank to either use them as like supporters or mouthpieces or something, or people who would represent, you know, a roadblock for them, they would try to remove them and integrate them into the transistor, which makes the transistor more powerful every time they do that. And then they remove all these people. So like, I don't know, that part kind of rings true, where this political faction wants to use influential people to serve their own gain. It's kind of like right now, as we're recording this, there's a whole bunch of talk about like the Democratic Party wants to get Taylor Swift involved in their campaign. And it's like, I was like, oh yeah.
Get her involved, man. She just won a Super Bowl for them.
Yes.
Yeah, no, so, I'm just kidding.
This kind of like fits with that, where it's like, okay,
well, it does. Yep.
How do we influence like the general population? Well, we get the most popular singer and the most popular athlete and local politicians and stuff like that. We get them on our side somehow, whatever it takes. Like, they do evil shit to get people on their side in this game. So some of those people that I wrote down, like there is a professional motorcycle racer. There is the person who paints the sky, who is, so that is Preston, the motorcycle racer, Farah, the sky painter. There's Wave Tenigan, which is a great name for a broadcast personality. There's Red, whose music has like great influence on society. There's this guy named Olmark, who's a professional athlete. All people who I think they wanted to win support of. But there's also a bunch of NPCs who would be like opposition forces that they try to remove. There's a scientist named Lillian, who they viewed as a meddler. There is a detective named Henter Jalliford or Hiaford or something like that. I think that's how they said it. A detective who was investigating the Camerata. So they wanted to get him off the trail. So they took him out. So we have this list of all these influential people for different reasons that the Camerata were trying to like deal with. And then one by one, they killed them all, basically. Part of their plan also was to find these people who they could like easily explain if they disappeared. So it's like, there's this guy who's like a stunt man, and he did this like stunt where he's going to like paraglide into like this dangerous area of town that's like run by the corporations or something. And they're like, well, he'll paraglide in here and they'll never see him again. And that's easy to explain away, stuff like that. So their plan to win influence, I thought, was really interesting. And this is what you learn by reading all of those function descriptions as you go.
Yeah, this is, I was like, listening to you and looking at your notes, Dave, it's fascinating, because that is something that I miss in this game by not reading all of the notes on each of the functions. That's such a cool piece of this story, just like to see how that's integrated. It really makes me want to hit that new game plus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. Like, I think once I made the commitment to try to dig into it, you know, like, I play all the From Software games. Every time I start a new game, I'm like, I'm going to read the item descriptions this time. I'm going to put that story together. And I never fucking do it. I never follow through on it. So I started this game with that same kind of idea, with like, okay, I'm going to read these descriptions. I'm going to take some notes on who these people are, why they're influential, what did the Camerata want with them. And it quickly became apparent that, number one, it's easy to like piece them together, unlike the From Software item descriptions.
Right.
It's easy to piece them together, and it's easy to see immediately like their role in this story. Why is the Camerata interested in them? So it was really easy, like, once I started with that, to continue with it. And most games don't really get me in that mode, you know? Like, I'll spend the first couple hours reading everything, and then I'll be like, okay, this is all kind of bullshit. It doesn't matter. I'm not reading anymore. But not this game.
Oh, that's cool. And it's cool that they're all, like, each of those stories is attached to one of the functions, too. So it's like,
You
know, it gives it a little bit more agency.
Yeah, so again, it's like, if you read, let's say you pick up Cull. You mentioned that as an ability you liked, and then you really like using it as like one of like the attack functions, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for its basic function. But then you read about it and you're like, oh, okay, so this is Olmark. Olmark is a professional athlete. I want to learn more about Olmark. But in order to learn more, I've got to stop using it as an attack, and I got to use it as a passive now. to unlock that other part of Ulmark's story. And I thought that's really cool. That's a nice way to get you to mix it up. If you're invested in this, then this is a way to get you to experiment more.
That's another thing that kind of carried over to Hades in a way where you're getting different pieces, not the exact same way. I think this is fascinating, the way that they actually integrated into the gameplay, but where you go and talk to folks in Hades and you get another piece of their story. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool to see that DNA here.
Yeah. Or if in Hades, you know, you really like learning about fucking Dionysus or whatever, like you're going to pick up his boons whenever you see it, because you get to talk with Dionysus every time you do that. So kind of similar here. Yeah. So eventually you get on like the trail of the Camerata, and you kind of, all of this is backstory for stuff that happened like before the game. We didn't mention this in the non-spoiler part, but all the characters are dead when you find them, all the NPCs. It's not until like, I don't think it's until you meet Royce at the end that you talk to another living person, right?
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but that checks out. I mean, you're talking to the Transistor the whole time, your buddy or your lover and the Transistor. But no, I don't think there's any other, it's just an empty city. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you talk with one of the Camerata members, Asher, on the phone for a while, or like on like the call or whatever, but he's dead by the time you reach him.
Right.
So
that was another, like the story really, it had been picking up for me at that point, but it was the part of the game, I hadn't been paying attention to my hours yet. So I wasn't for sure how far I was. And I felt like I was like, oh, I might be approaching endgame here. And then I walk into the room thinking I'm going to fight because this is right after you fight one of the main bosses. Is it what do we call that thing earlier?
Like the spine?
The spine. Yeah. I don't think it's that far after the spine, but you go in, and I thought we were going to fight Asher and his buddy, and they were just dead already. I was like, oh, all right. This is not the end game. Still got a couple more hours ahead of me.
Yeah, they do kind of set you up like it's going to be a confrontation, but something was happening, and they were, I think the Asher said that this guy named Grant was sick. So he died. Was
corrupted by the process, I believe. Okay, that's what I took from it. It was kind of like messing with his brain, which is another interesting thing. You know, we mentioned there's no people throughout the city, but you do hit a point in the game where you run into the process baddies all have names. Whether it's Woof, which is like the little dog thing. Is that what it's called? Something like that.
Yeah, or like the lady, or the... Yeah. I think there's one called like Snapshot or Paparazzi or something like that.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Which is all pretty fun. And then you run into this one that it's called a human, which basically looks like, you know, it's a human with like... There's something weird going on with its head. But presumably like the process has infected the humans in the city as well.
Yeah, and those become a lot more common as you go on, because you go through, like, I think you're going through, like, you know, parts of the city that haven't been hit super hard by the process, but eventually you double back to the place where the game started, and it's, like, completely overrun by the process. So, like, you start out in that really, you know, it's a nice-looking section of the city, and then it's just, like, completely white and gross by the time you get back there. So Royce kind of contacts you, and he wants to kind of help fix the mistake that they made. So you go back. He says that the way to do this is to put the Transistor back into its cradle, which will erase the process. But putting the Transistor in the cradle would mean that you would lose the voice of Red's boyfriend. I don't think we ever said this, but like they're definitely like partners.
They're lovers for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So he would be gone if you put the Transistor into that cradle, because souls get trapped inside there and they can't get out ever again. And there's a touching moment where, like, you know, they kind of say goodbye. He tells Red that he loves her as she puts the sword back in there.
Mm-hmm. No, that was cool. And the tension, that's another, you know, another, like, you know, nod to the team that made this game and the game itself. Like, there's some real tension in the way that it's laid out and just the dialogue and the everything where, you know, you kind of feel like you're watching Red make some decisions. You know, you're guiding her along the way, obviously, but
yeah,
you know, this is some pretty heavy stuff she's got to make decisions on. You know, is she gonna save her, you know, her soulmate or partner or whatever, and is she gonna save the city? You know, what is she gonna do?
Yeah, and I guess like when you make the decision to put the transistor back in there, you're not really clear on like what's gonna happen. You're just kind of trusting that it will destroy the process, and it does, but then things kind of get weird after that. So they've been mentioning this place called the Country, mm-hmm. which you don't know what this is quite yet, but after putting this in the transistor, or putting the transistor in the cradle, and there's a one of those songs with the vocals in it during that part, you're out in the country with Royce, and he has a transistor also. And this feels like a kind of a game contrivance, but like, he's like, oh, we both have a transistor, but only one of them can take us back to the city, yeah. or something. Like, there could only be one or some shit. So you have to fight him, but it's a cool fight because he can do like the pause and issue commands yes. shit that you can do too. It's the only time you fight someone like that.
It was a weird flip of, you know, it was a weird flip the script, dude, because you do get used to, you know, that turn-based combat and like kind of planning everything out. But, you know, when you get an idea of what all the baddies do, kind of what they're, you know, what to expect. And then to have Royce, who essentially has all the exact same powers as Red or your character or yourself, you know, and then to try and think about like, okay, like I need to rethink about how this is going to work. Like I need to, you know, I need to stop. And I personally had to be way more defensive. Like I usually didn't use my time and my, you know, that little bar that allows you to what you can take care of within the pause section to run away from stuff. Mm-hmm. I would just run in real time. But against Royce, like I had to be a lot more strategic about my defense.
Yeah, it felt kind of dirty. Like I was being violated in a way. Yeah. It was like, you can't pause it. You can't do that to me.
Right?
And it was cool. Tough. I think it's like a best of five fight or something like that. Like, it's not yeah. just like one health bar for each person.
I'm a little confused on exactly how that worked for you. I mean, it's the regular stuff, but for him, you got to bring down his health bar at least five times. I think I think it states it's three rounds, but two of the rounds have two full health bars or something like that. So I don't know.
Something like that. But you have to take him down multiple times. So.
Definitely.
But it was fun. It was a fun kind of like, it's a fun way, a fun creative final boss, we'll say.
Definitely.
Because this is the final boss. And mm-hmm. up until then, the bosses had all been just like a really big process robot. Or in the case of the Spine, that was a unique kind of thing. But then they really flipped the script on you with Royce being able to pause it. So good, totally. Good challenge. Like, it's a way for you to test out all that strategy that you've learned against someone who can do the same shit that you can. It was tight. Mm-hmm. I liked it.
I did too. I think the only other human boss, I think Sybil, the first boss, is someone, she like, you find her and then she like, the process takes her over immediately. I think she might already be dead actually. And then she gets mm-hmm. taken into the process. But yeah, as far as like live human or whatever, and he's definitely the most powerful boss that you run into and smartest.
Yeah, for sure.
Seconds march into the past. Moments pass. Just like that, they're gone. The river always finds the sea. So helplessly, like you find me. We are paper boats. You can run, but
So once you kill him, you go back to the city with the transistor, and Red has her voice back, and you have this mechanic where you can sing to kind of like heal parts of the city, and Red does that a couple of times, but she gets back to the point where the dead body was.
That was part of, like, so that was the thing. So, like, the reason that Royce, and to my understanding, wanted to, well, one, he wants to live, but two, like, getting out of the cradle with a transistor would give them the opportunity to remake the whole city. It's basically a blank slate. So as she sings, she's singing, but it's a transistor. She's able to basically rebuild the city any way she wants. Mm-hmm. So that brings us to, you know, so that's what she's doing there. To my understanding, she's like, I think she's singing because she's got her voice back, but then she's using the transistor to kind of rebuild the city. And then she comes to a crossroads.
Yeah. Yeah. She gets back to the part where the boyfriend, the unnamed guy, his body's there, but it's like completely taken over by the process. Mm-hmm. And she, I think she kind of heals that, like kind of puts it back to normal. But then, like you kind of think like, okay, we're going to fix everything in the city. But Red kind of sits down next to the body, and then she sends the transistor out and like turns around to face her. And the guy's voice like gets really desperate as everyone realizes like what's about to happen. He's like the voice acting here, like you can hear the desperation as he's like, Red, no. And, she kills herself with the transistor so that she can join him inside of it, and live there forever with him. And this is where that song Paper Boats plays, where the lyrics are talking about, like, the big chorus in the song is, I will always find you, like it's written in the stars. So that kind of made me think about this ending. Like, Red didn't fix the city. She just went to go be with the man that she loves.
Love, man. It always wins.
Yeah. Kind of made me think, like, Red basically spurned any, like, responsibility that you think she might have had to fix things. She was like, no, fuck that. Apparently she was like, I don't care about the city more than I care about him. So right. I'm out.
Yeah. That's one of the fun things about this story, man. Like that particular scene, like it was, you know, coming off of the final baddie, the final boss. And then I kind of had like, okay, like she's just going to fix the city. Like that's what makes sense.
Yeah.
But then for her to make that choice, I was like, I was like, oh shit. Like, no way.
Yeah.
And then you after, you know, it's only 7 hours, but like that's 7 hours where I'm like hanging out with Red, controlling Red. And I'm like, damn, all for naught, but not all for naught. She did it for love, man. She did it.
Right.
And then presumably they get to be together in love in the transistor for all of eternity, which is poetic.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, it's hard to say. Like, I don't really know entirely what's going on with the lore and everything with the city itself. Like, from the scene that we saw, like the people are gone. So like, she may be able to rebuild the city, but I don't know if people would come back anyways. I'm not sure how that would work. So that may play into her decision a little bit. But I think that it's powerful. It was a very powerful scene, dude. And it was fun. It was like it was cool to. Yeah, I did not see that coming.
Yeah. I think that part of it is because I think it's natural for people playing the game to assume that Red is taking on the quest of saving the city. Mm-hmm. Once, because early in the game, she's leaving on the motorcycle and then she turns around and goes back into the city. And so you just assume because you play video games or something that you're like, oh, she's going to beat the process. She's going to save the city. But she never stated that that was her goal. The guy never like said, oh, I see what you're doing here. Like, of course, let's go take the fight to them. That's what we do. We're going to be the heroes. Like, nobody ever says that. You just kind of assume it because you play video games and you know how stuff works. But that was never the point.
Right. And I can't remember the exact dialogue, but the unknown lover, he mentions a couple times throughout, like that they, you know, before she takes that turn, the whole idea is like, they're going to skip town. They're going to skip town.
They're going to escape. Yeah.
And get out of this whole thing. And it's interesting that, you know, clearly after, you know, getting to end game, it's like that decision to take that left, even though he wanted to keep going out of town, that decision to go back, I guess, like you were saying, you presume that, it is to save the city, but truly she's trying to save her relationship.
Yeah, she's trying to be reunited with him in a more natural way. Like, maybe she decided after that, like, you know, that first half hour, that first hour, whatever, that like her having her body and him being inside the sword was not like the state that she wanted to continue right. with this.
Super so, interesting though, because he, yeah. by the end of the game, you know, the transistor fella, it's hard for him not having a name. But yeah. anyways, he, you know, he becomes complacent with like, he's like down for it. He's like, you know what? I'll just be your companion. Like I'll continue to live in this sword deal and we can still be together this way. And she's like, yeah, not quite like that. We'll still be yeah. together, but not like that.
Yeah. So it turns out this was never really a story about saving the city. I think that all the things that happened, like defeating the process and finding the Camerata and stuff like that, was just stuff in the middle, like stuff that was in the way of the ultimate right. goal, rather than like Red having some noble purpose to save the city. So that was cool. Now, you mentioned trying to figure out like what is the deal with the city? And so did you have any indication or thought that this was not just people in a future setting, like real people, you know?
I did some digging and I've seen some discourse on the internet that has some theories that like maybe it's you know, this is a digital world to begin with and like the yeah. country is leaving in that area, but I'm not sold on that idea. I don't know. What are you thinking?
So definitely the first time I played it, I thought that this was just like regular real people in a future city, and then there's magic. There's a magic sword.
Sure.
Like I can suspend disbelief and accept that there's a magic sword, of course.
That's more or less where I was at on my playthrough, to be honest. Like yeah. a little bit deeper than that, but more or less that.
Yeah. So then there's just a lot of stuff like the way things are coded in the game, like the way things are named, we'll say, mm-hmm. And the way things work would lead you to believe that this could be a digital space. Like the process is like a cancerous program, like a virus or something like that. All of the functions, they have those names, but we didn't say like, it will say like crash and then it will have like parentheses afterwards, yep. like, you know, a coding language would have or something like that. And I thought that the country was like a euphemism for programs that get deleted, kind of like how parents okay, would sure. tell their kids that their pet went out to live on a yeah. farm or something like that. Like right. Something. So I heard about the theory that this is all a digital world. And that got me thinking that like, maybe this is like a digital heaven or something mm-hmm. like that, or just a, well, I don't want to say, you know, other stories where consciousness gets digitized and then goes to live in like this digital world or something. And that Cloud Bank is something like that. And that would explain why it's set up as this utopia or something. Because if someone created it, they would want to make it to be a wonderful, beautiful place to live where your choices matter and stuff like that. Like if there's going to be government in heaven, it might as well be something where you have a voice, you know?
Right. There's the part where Asher and Grant, like, so they take their own lives. And there's the unknown transistor fella says something about that being selfish, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But there, that particular piece is what threw me off to like, cause it makes sense. And I love, and then definitely 100% like it's a very interesting how like there's the different coding language thrown in throughout. So like, I can't tell if that's just like, because it's like this, like supposed to be this futuristic world that's very integrated into like a digital system, or if right. these different planes of existence. It's hard to say. And it's all speculation. Like, I think that's, you know, it's for us to decide. But I think like that was the weird part, I guess, for me was like his comment about them being selfish about leaving the place that would theoretically, in this case, be the like the heaven or the afterlife to go back to the normal world. That part just like threw me off.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't even considered that like they could go to a non-digital space.
Right. Because it does end with, you know, the two lovers in, like, next to a barn in, like, a field, you know, and it looks more, well, it looks like the country, but it also looks, like, more real-world-esque, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if the country is inside the transistor.
Could be.
You know, Red and her lover are now both inside of the transistor, and I think the country was kind of explained as a place where, like, you know, people go.
Right.
So it could just be like a recreation inside the transistor. So like if Cloud Bank is a digital world or a digital heaven or something, like inside the transistor is a digital space inside of a digital space. And you keep going down like levels, you know?
Yeah. 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 Until you get to hell and you have to fight your way out. That's true.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a cool theory to just kind of like take as, okay, a possibility and then see right. how all of this stuff fits in.
I think that's what's cool about the story itself, though. I think a lot of really successful stories like leave that openness, you know, like we don't 100% like, because I'm not anti that angle. I think there's a lot of like stuff that lines up for that. But I think it's cool that we can speculate and kind of think about like, well, is that what the deal is? Because we can't be for sure.
Yeah. And I think I want to shout out, I think it was people in the Discord server, Pieboy and Artful Scruff, who kind of posed this as a possibility and just kind of like, but not like saying like, this is what's going on. It was right. like, hey, do you consider like, there's this theory and then... Yeah, everything in the game fits really well into this all being some kind of digital space. But then, you know, it could just also be a high-tech place with magic. That's also fine with me. I can handle that too. So, cool. It's cool. And the fact that the game gives you so little, like, direct, this is what Cloud Bank is. This is how Cloud Bank was built. Like, they don't tell you any of that. So... you're left, you can fill in all those pieces. That's one of my favorite types of stories where they give you enough, but they don't give you everything.
Right.
Good stuff. This has been a good time. I appreciate you taking the time as always to come on and chat about this game with me. Good theorizing. Always fun.
Hell yeah, man. Thanks for having me back on. It's honestly a treat, dude. You put out some awesome content. I love your show. Both shows are fun. And it's just really, it's fun to talk about this game with you. And, as I edit my podcast, I'm excited that you get to edit this one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Always a good time. but you know, I record these so far in advance that, by the time I get to editing this, I will have forgotten most of what we say. So I get to listen back on the conversation and, relive it one more time. So yeah. Thank you again, man. Thanks for the kind words. Thanks for the conversation, as always. It's always a pleasure.
Hell yeah, man.
And thank everybody for listening. I appreciate you sticking it out to the end, as always. And if you want to come in again, if you want to talk about those theories about what's actually going on in Cloud Bank, what it actually is, what the fuck is the transistor? Come into the Discord server and chat about it with us. I'm looking forward to those discussions. So thank you once again for everybody who listened all the way to the end, and tune in next week for the next game to come out of the backlog.